I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
There is no better group of ones for flower power than forms of the shrubby potentilla.
Hello and welcome to This Week in the Garden. I'm Peter Seabrook, here to help with some of your gardening quandaries. For a while I've been wanting to discuss one of my favourite flowers, Agapanthus. Today I'm joined by Patrick Fairweather from Fairweather's Wholesale Nursery in Bewley in Hampshire. They're one of the largest and most experienced growers of Agapanthus plants in Europe. My thanks to Mr. Fothergill Seeds, sponsor of this podcast. Well, we needed the rain, and we've had some now in Essex. But those repeated heavy showers over the weekend were frustrating. I got a good soaking three times trying to get autumn mums planted at the Royal Horticultural Society's garden at Hyde Hall. Actually, in the rain, taking some of the pots off, I noticed that the compost was still dry in some patches. Normally, under those conditions, I would have just dropped the pot in a bucket of water until the bubbles stopped rising to make sure that that was really wet. But I'm afraid I just pressed on, gave them all a good watering after they were planted, and then with the rain, that should really settle them in. We've spoken quite a bit about the floral fantasia area at the Hyde Hall Gardens, and if you've not been able to get there, we've shot a short video. If you go on to sungardening.co.uk, and just scroll down into videos and look for floral fantasia, you can just see how colourful that area still is at this time of year. What's in the news this week? Well, I was very interested to read that research scientists at the University of Alberta have found that sunflowers are very polite. They send fewer roots out into nutrient-rich areas of soil when another sunflower's roots is growing in the same patch. Reminds me of good table manners, you know, when somebody hands you a plate of very nice cakes, you have to take the ones nearest to you. And now we've got sunflowers doing much the same, that when their roots spread out in the soil, if they meet another lot of roots going into a very rich bit of soil, they hold back and share. I mean, prior research has already shown that plants react to one another underground. And the Alberta research just confirms that. Remarkable that two plants can behave in ways that are beneficial to both. We've always known that wider spacing gives larger plants, but hadn't realised that some plant roots respect others searching for food in the same area. Goodness, we have a lot to learn about this business yet, don't we? Earlier this week, I popped in and saw the Curley family in Cambridgeshire. They breed petunias. And boy, do they breed some petunias. They started over 20 years ago with a double variety that's called Priscilla. And now they have six series. There's a series called Ovation, which has mounded growth that suits patio containers. They have Presto, which is a bit more upright. They have Fanfare. They have Designer, which has pretty unusual colours flowers. And then Titan, which are the very big flowers. But David Curley and his son Tim are really bent on getting plants that will resist the weather. And if you go and walk their rows after really heavy rain, unlike the old-fashioned and rather traditional petunias, they won't be all spotted and brown and dying with disease. They just take the wind and the wet very well indeed. currently, they have 100 different varieties in the laboratory, in test tubes. That's how they maintain the stock to keep it clean. And, of course, all of the curly hybrids are propagated from cuttings. They've got a new Fanfare Blue and a new Red for 2021. And the reds, they are an unbelievable clear red. That was always the difficult colour in the past. But the plant breeders are really giving us some unusual and very clean, attractive colour. I was there late afternoon, it was quite warm. And the fragrance is another thing. We tend to forget how scented petunias are. But back home, I'm afraid my garden is still rather like the cobbler's children's shoes. I'm desperately trying to catch up, and things just keep getting in the way. The lawn, for example, it's like walking on a thick pile carpet and desperately in need of scarifying. Most of this summer, to save time, I've cut with a hover mower. And now, of course, there's an awful lot of thatch to be removed. I'll probably get somebody to come in with a machine to do that. And once they have given it a really good raking and taken out all that old rough dead grass, I'll overseed with 0.5 ounce per square yard of new seed. And then, if I can get myself together enough, return to my trusty push mower and get the lawn back into some sort of condition. I have got two compost bins emptied, and one of them refilled again pretty well straight away. I love to have put two or three hods of lawn mowings into the bottom of an empty compost bin and then heap the stuff on top of it, and within 3 or 4 days the whole lot is steaming hot. If I push a cane in and then pull it out, put my hand on the cane, it can get so hot you can hardly hold it. That really gets the stuff rotting down. The material that I have dug out from the bins is now stacked on the vegetable garden, ready to start the winter digging. There's one thing, once I get the plot dug, ideally this side of Christmas, at least that lot will be clean and I'll be up to date with that. I am collecting seeds from both scabious and sweet peas, and that's a job you need to do pretty well every day when the weather's hot, because they dry quite quickly, and if you're not careful, they shed before you've got them and stored in paper bags. Always paper bags, never polythene. Polythene is too wet. And the one thing you want with home-harvested seeds is to dry them.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Several weeks ago at a trade show, I bumped into Patrick Fairweather. I hadn't seen him for a little while, and twisted his arm and persuaded him to come on for the interview this week. Now, I knew his father. I seem to have known everybody's father. But Patrick seems to be a master of all trades, garden centre, nursery, and specialist in agapanthus. Patrick, can you give us a little idea of how the business started?
Yes, sure. Well, my father's initial interest in horticulture started in tea farming, and he was based in East Africa and worked for Brook Bond. But his first job coming back to the UK was as the general manager at Exbury, where he managed the nursery that in its time was producing a lot of rhododendrons and azaleas.
I mean, they had a very skilled knifesman there, didn't they? A really skilled propagator. I forget his name.
Vic Pikulowski.
That's it.
Absolutely. And they propagated up a very high water tower, if you remember, in the Exbury Estate Yard.
Yes, that's right.
Extraordinary setup, carrying cuttings upstairs and then bringing them back down prepared. And they were, you know, stuck into very old Victorian glass houses. But they had great success in their day with the skills that they had.
But it would have been a great place for your father to learn those skills if he'd, if he'd come back from tea planting.
Absolutely. No, and he really learned everything there because he hadn't had a formal horticultural training. But at the same time as he joined Exbury, he met my mother, who was one of the last students to come out of Waterperry when it was a women's only horticultural college. And the two of them decided that they were going to start our garden centre in Bewley Village, which was in 1961, which, of course, in those days, the concept of a garden centre, the plants were grown still in the ground. They were not in pots. But he made a trip to America and saw people using old baked bean tins as pots and came back in about 62 and started doing that very same thing of growing plants in reused food tins.
I hadn't realised that he was in with those pioneers.
Yeah.
There's three names that did stick with me, but I hadn't realised that Christopher was one of them. Yeah,
it was very similar timing to when, Stuart started the same, and obviously we're not far apart, but he saw the opportunity because it, you know, obviously allowed people to sell plants year-round, which until then, the planting season was limited to when plants were lifted and bare-rooted in sort of autumn through till spring.
So the garden centre we know, very picturesque down there in the New Forest. When did the nursery, and why the nursery?
So he started the nursery about a mile away from the garden centre on a greenfield site in the late 70s, about 78, and initially started growing conifers in the ground. I think he found that he couldn't buy everything that he wanted to sell for the garden centre, so he started propagating particularly new and unusual plants. And I mean, one of his earliest finds was Leylandii Castle Welland Gold, which he found in a hedge as a sport in Northern Ireland. And I think from that plant and others on, then he saw the opportunity of starting to grow for the wholesale market because there was an interest in more new varieties.
You're opening a whole new book to me. You know, having grown Castle Welland Gold for so many years, you know, it's a good plant given the right treatment. I hadn't realised that I had to thank Christopher for that.
In the 80s as well, he started a nursery back in Kenya because he found it hard to leave Africa behind, and we started growing camellias on a tea nursery. Obviously they're the same variety, and he brought them back. The initial intention was to grow them for the Dutch auctions, but we never got to the volumes of that, and but you know, he was bringing unrooted material of Eleagnus for tinias, and you know, he was well before his time of in terms of, you know, thinking about offshore cutting production, but he was doing it with woody plants rather than now what we see is obviously all the annuals being produced in Africa.
Now, they were pretty big shoes to fill.
They were, but we got on very well. He was a very good teacher. He was very patient, and the business, fortunately, he had the opportunity to expand. So we had, initially, I didn't get involved in the garden centre and was focused on the nursery. We were growing a lot of container trees in those days, as well as young 9-centimetre, in those days, 8-centimetre liners that I remember all being packed into old tea crates when I first started. But no, he was a very patient teacher, and having had no training myself, I learnt on the job with him and my mother, and have been allowed to build the business from there.
And so now you have a sizable business in what we call liners, supplying young plants, but a particular specialism in Agapanthus. I wonder if I could bore you just for a minute or two, because I've just read a piece by Robin Lane Fox, a gardening journalist I have the greatest respect for, who's writing about meeting Arthur Hellier. Arthur was a great garden writer, book author and all sorts, and he was the one who rejected my first submission of a gardening column, so I remember Arthur Hellier rather well. But in 1971, Arthur said to Robin Lane Fox, gardeners would wake up to Agapanthus and their colour range would be transformed. Now, that was the comment in 1971, and you're certainly doing that today, aren't you?
I think so. I think we've grown the market and consumer interest significantly. Thanks to many people who've had the vision of what a great plant they are and what pleasure they bring people. I think somehow they seem to bring a ray of sunshine, a memory of holidays, and the range of colours, of habits, of flowering times have significantly increased, and it's really only just the beginning of the journey.
Now, you tend to specialise within the smaller size, the 9 centimetre. How are they produced?
Right, so all the plants that we produce are produced in vitro, so in tissue culture. We take a very young flowering bud of a plant and put it into tissue culture in a laboratory in the UK. And then from there on, once we look towards increased volumes, we ship the culture, which is a sterile, in a sterile medium, to various labs around the world, including India, China, and Indonesia. And they're brought back in, as in sterile conditions, where we then plant them into little plugs. And they're then taking about 2 years before they would reach the consumer as a flowering plant in garden centres.
Right. And now there are two types, narrow leaf and broad leaf. Is that still the case?
It's a little bit more complicated than that. It was always felt that, you know, the deciduous ones tended to have narrower leaves and were hardier, and the evergreens were the broader leaves. But in fact, a lot of the hybridization has actually muddled that up, and now it's much, much harder to identify whether a plant is deciduous or evergreen from its leaf. But as a whole, you know, some of the narrower leaves are more compact and shorter. That is true.
You know, I find life getting increasingly complicated, and I can't remember all the detail. So if we were thinking of having some Agapanthus in the garden, either in the border or the containers, can you recommend a few names? I mean, the one that I can remember is Fireworks.
Yep. Well, Fireworks is a plant that we launched at Chelsea this year, and it got third in the best new plant competition. It's a new evergreen that's been bred in South Africa from a breeding program that is producing many good new varieties, and it's got a fantastic bicolor flower. So it's got a blue base that then flares out to white petals. It is evergreen. And it's probably best, therefore, grown in a pot. And that's the main kind of decision probably that people need to make. If they want to plant in a border, they're better off picking a deciduous variety that is hardier, will lose its leaves every winter. But sometimes the flowers are slightly less flamboyant and the colour mix is not quite as wide as the evergreens, which, unless you're in a mild part of the country, are better planted in pots so they can be given a little bit of winter protection.
And what does that mean? Do I need a cold greenhouse? Can it go against a south-facing wall? How far north?
Right.
So
well,
many
if
questions.
You've got it, there are many different factors that can determine what an Agapanthus will survive. But ultimately, they've got very fleshy roots. So the one thing they won't like is a combination of wet and cold. So if you can, if you've got a greenhouse or a conservatory or a bright porch, great. That would be the first thing. If not, pull them under the eaves of the house to save them getting so much winter rain. And if not, pop a bit of fleece over the top as well. Normally, we would say probably evergreen varieties will survive down to -5 or 10. But because they form their flower buds in the autumn before they flower, if the top of the plant gets heavily frosted, whilst the plant may survive, it means that you may get less flowers the following year. So unless it's certainly coastal areas, west coast of Scotland all the way down into the West Country and west coast of Wales, where you've got a bit of Gulf Stream, and also in urban areas, you probably get away with the evergreens being left outside without too much attention. But in more rural areas, it's worth trying to make sure they get that extra bit of protection.
Now, you've given me a gem of information with the news that the flower bud is laid down now.
Yeah.
So presumably it's worth feeding in late summer, early autumn.
It certainly is. And, you know, obviously making sure you pick the right feed, so high potash, so you want to be using, you know, a Tomarite or a Miracle-Gro, something you'd use to encourage flowers rather than a nitrogen-based fertiliser. And, yeah, feeding into August, early September is a good thing. And one other key bit of advice is there's always been advice to dry your plant off if it's evergreen, as you think about bringing it into the greenhouse or into the porch. But in fact, again, we believe that if you dry the plant back too much in autumn, it can also have an impact on the way that the flower forms. So for the evergreen varieties that keep growing through the winter, you do want to make sure that you keep the compost moist. They like moisture, but they don't like sitting wet.
That's extremely useful.
Yeah.
What other plants have you got to tempt us? Because it's not just agapanthus that you're introducing.
Our other big range is lavenders. Predominantly we grow the hardy English lavender. Angustifolia is obviously our biggest and most popular variety is Hidcote, which many people will know, named after the famous garden in the Cotswolds. But lots of other newer varieties as well that have been bred for different flower colours and form. The French lavenders, which we also grow, which are the ones that got the little flags or sterile bracts, are slightly less popular because they're not as hardy, but people still like them for more sheltered parts of the garden or to grow in pots.
Patrick, can I just take you off to on another subject? You do quite a bit with schools. And the last time I was down, which is a good many years ago, too many years ago, I think, you actually had a school garden across the road from the garden centre. Are you still doing that work?
Yeah, very much so. So we have school visits every term week of the year from our local school in Bewley, but also from other schools in the area. And they come and join in whatever activities our garden needs, whether it be planting, harvesting, weeding, making compost, and then at the end of the sessions they get a chance of tasting some raw vegetables, whether it be lettuce, beans. But the idea is that we're trying to give them a better understanding of where their food comes from and equip them with some skills which seem to have been increasingly lost as children grow up in a different age of phones and social media.
But in practice, they actually love it, don't they? They abandon their phones for a little while once they can get their hands dirty and splash water about.
Yeah, no, they do. And I mean, many of them return, you know, with their parents, very proud to show their parents what they've done, what they've been involved in. And, you know, we've begun to see now some children returning for work experience. So sowing a seed early has really proved to us that, you know, you can catch the imagination of youngsters. And hopefully it'll be something that they'll retain for the rest of their life. And some of them now we know come and tell us about the gardens that they've encouraged their parents to start with a bit of vegetable growing in their back garden, which has been very rewarding.
But if there are any listeners who are interested in getting agapanthus, do you supply direct?
Yes, people can order straight online from our website, agapanthus and lavenders, www.fairweathers.co.uk. horticulture.uk, or obviously they can visit our garden centre in Bewley Village, where we carry some stock but not everything that you want. So if people want specific varieties, it's best they check in advance if it's in stock.
www.fairweathers.co.uk.
That's right, yeah.
So that's easy enough. Patrick, as soon as I can, I want to pop down and see that school garden.
Good.
And the garden centre again.
Peter.
Yeah. Thank you very much for today.
Okay, no problem. Speak to you soon.
What's on? Well, from the 4th to the 6th of this month, it's the Taste of Autumn show at RHS Hyde Hall. What was the fruit and vegetable show that used to be held in Vincent Square in London? And, of course, that show, now at Hyde Hall, also is home for the giant pumpkin competition. So it'll be the start of those enthusiasts desperately keen to break world records to wheel out huge pumpkins, some of them weighing close to a ton. You can't understand why they do it, but there you are. My thanks to Mr. Fothergill Seeds, sponsor of this podcast. And thanks to you for listening. Enjoy your garden. We'll be back next Thursday. Discover more at sungardening.co.uk.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.